Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on Apple Podcasts.
Dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, dumpty, da, da, dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, diddly, dum, dumpty, diddly, dumpty, dumpty, diddly, dum, dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, diddly, dum.
This is Dumpty Dum, a podcast about the archers and the goings-on of Ambridge. I'm the Thirst Trap, who is Stephen Bowden.
And I'm Jacqueline Berto, who is a real trooper.
And then there's you, our lovely Dumpty Dummers, who are taking your minds off things by joining Team Horobin. Welcome to Dumpty Dum, a show about our favourite country village. This week's episodes of The Archers were written by Daniel Thurman, who also did last week, so this business of doing 2 weeks in a row is becoming a bit of a trend. Coming up, we have calls from
Becky, a first-time caller in a hooray, who has further thoughts on George.
Stephanie, who also remains worried about that particular Grundy.
Glyn, who has thoughts on Harry and Alice and the bull.
Pip, who brings her expertise and experience to bear on Harrison's situation.
Witherspoon, who wants to talk about cirrhosis.
And finally, Sue, another first-time caller in a hooray, with thoughts on George, Miranda and Hannah. We also have emails from my first-time emailer in a Nicola, and our regular correspondent, Chris, in Indiana. Plus, we have The Week in Ambridge by Rob, a roundup of the Facebook group from Vicky, and the Tweets of the Week from Theo. But before we start talking too much, let's remind ourselves of what happened over the last 7 days with a roundup of The Week in Ambridge from our Rob.
Just when you thought it was safe to put your headphones back on, I'm back with a roundup of the toings and froings of the good and not so good people of Ambridge. And what a week it's been. We started off with the Easter egg relay race thing that Kenton came up with in a fever dream and didn't manage to explain properly. George decided he'd win in order to A, stick it to Jolene, and B, get the prize of a night at Grey Gables with Tilly Butt, who I'm guessing was oblivious to his plans. He started off with just his overarching sense of self-confidence, till Grandpa Eddie invoked the cheeky chappy Grundy clause and helped him cheat. Obviously, he got rumbled and disqualified. Both Eddie and George were outraged and indignant about somebody having the temerity to not let them get away with it. Till he had a narrow escape, I think. Monday saw Brian and Miranda panting and gasping in the bedroom. I know that feeling. Quilt covers are a swine to get on sometimes. Justin called round to put Brian off the idea of stepping out with Miranda, but failed miserably. He then went round and tried the same with Miranda, with equally poor results. Meanwhile, Jolene was overwhelmed by people trying to make her life a bit less stressful. Robert never told her there was a plan afoot to get the dangerous dog owner's collar felt. As this didn't cheer Jolene up as much as might be expected, there were questions asked, and Jolene finally told all and promised to go to the police. Talking of police, Jolene's son-in-law on the force was finding out whether or not he still had a job. The hearing sounded like it was held in the county courtroom with a full public gallery, rather than the spare office that everybody assumed it would be. The prosecution was spit fire and vitriol and seemed to want Harrison to get a suspended sentence. Suspended by the neck, that is. Fortunately, a calm defence team and a contrite Harry managed to sway things Harrison's way and he got off with a written warning. Jolene came clean with Kenton about her interactions with Marky. For some reason, he's okay with her being threatened by phone or text, but tries to hobble to her rescue when he finds out that it was a face-to-face encounter in the supermarket. Good job she never told him about the initial car park confrontation. He calmed down when he was told that they were on a police priority list, meaning that they were never more than 3 working days away from a squad car. On the subject of encounters, Alice and Harry bumped into each other, and somehow, Alice ended up in the consulting room while Harry got his results from Dr. Malley. Harry didn't take them lying down, he just lied. Justin and Lillian had a fair old to-do over the way he's going on about Brianda. Is it jealousy, concern for Brian, or fearful of a Miranda exposing his humble beginnings? Who knows? Who cares? Having just got over the stress and anxiety of Harrison's hearing, Alice is obviously much more discreet when discussing Harry's private medical information with his mother. Oops, perhaps not. However, it comes as more as a disappointment than a surprise to Eve. She admits, much to Alice's outrage, that his family have all but given up on him. And we ended the week making me feel incredibly old. Yes, I remember Animal Magic with Johnny Morris. I also couldn't help feeling that this was the sort of thing that grandfathers and grandsons should be doing, rather than getting all huffy when their scheme to cheat their way to a prize gets found out. And it seems that the script writers have given up on the idea of a Friday cliffhanger, going instead for a Friday, well, I saw that one coming for ages, when Harry finally wheedled and wormed his way back into Alice's life. Oh, well, that's me done until, well, who knows when. Laters!
Thank you for that, Rob. Rob was stepping in this week because Suey, who normally does the week in Ambridge, is somewhere up near Niagara Falls and there to watch out for the eclipse. So I hope it's sunny skies for her.
Lovely.
So, Jacqueline, how has the last week been treating you?
Well, it's been very, very, very rainy and windy here. The joys of living in the countryside and with farmers muck spreading, etc., sowing, trying to sow things. I've been wading through mud on every dog walk, so it's been slightly downheartening, I should say. But luckily, because I can't garden, I've been working on my ferrets a lot.
That's good. I'm looking forward to seeing that in London in a few weeks' time.
Them. They go from the sublime to the ridiculous, I can assure you. And the sublime is nowhere near finished. How about you, Stephen? Now, I know a lot of people are interested to know how Tangle got over her surgery. And are you still sleeping on the sofa bed?
So Tangle is absolutely fine. You wouldn't have known anything had happened. She's asleep behind me, as she normally is.
Hmm.
And she was very well behaved for her checkup that I took her to straight after last week's recording. So that's all fine. Unfortunately, yes, I'm still sleeping on the sofa. The work on the bathroom begins in just under 2 weeks' time. And when that's done, it will be possible for the people to put the floor in the bedroom. And then I'll be able to get my new bed delivered. And I need to order a mattress to go with it. And then by the end of May, I should be back off the sofa and in a brand new bed on a brand new mattress. And everything will be great.
Oh, golly, that sounds like a very long way away. I hope your back's holding up.
It is, actually. It's just about. But yes, that'll have been, I think, about 5 months without the bedroom.
Ugh, poor you. Oh, dear. Well, keep fingers crossed that nothing gets in the way of that schedule.
Yes. Anyway, that's probably enough about us. Let's get on to the important bit, which is you, our lovely caller-in-a-ros. And first up is going to be Becky after we hear this.
Hello, Tiger.
Hi, it's Archie's Oatcake, aka Dr. Becky on X, also the Woodbug on X, and on other platforms. I wanted to talk about George. I do have a soft spot for George, as I think he's a really well-developed character, played brilliantly by the actor Angus Stobie. I particularly enjoy the scenes with Brad, another really well-drawn character, superbly acted by Taylor Utley. So I like the way the scriptwriters play all the Cain and Abel vibes of the pair. As a listener, therefore, I find myself being well-disposed towards scenes with George, but I'm wondering where the Archers are going with his character. We've seen his misogyny in the past, but he did seem to have improved and he's been generally less lazy, for example. Lately, though, He seems to be undergoing a relapse. He's often very rude to Emma, which I find very difficult. I found the cricket scenes painful, as he was again filming people without permission with a view to posting online and being menacing towards Hannah. It was disappointing that Chris was shown to enable this abuse by pairing him with Hannah and that she didn't refuse on the basis of his behaviour and aggression. I felt like there were hints that George could tip over into physical violence, so I don't know if the actress is trying to make the point of the effect that Andrew Tate's sorts of influences can have or where verbal abuse can lead. I really hope this doesn't happen, as there are too many women shown to be victims of abusive men in The Archers. The obvious examples of recent times are Helen, Kirsty, and Alice. At the moment, Jolene, Emma, and Hannah are all facing misogyny, and in Jolene's case, threats of male violence, while Kenton is shown to be returning to normality relatively unscathed. I'm quite happy with George being a complex character with flaws, but I do have an issue with the ongoing presentation of women as victims of men in The Archers. I wonder if The Archers are unsure how to present women as knowing their own rights and able to protect themselves from potential abuse.
Well, thank you for that, Becky. Great first time, very detailed caller in there. Mind you, I have to say, initially, it's very bold of you to have a soft spot for George. But what you had to say was actually, I more or less 100% agree with you, because women are often portrayed as victims of men, and the whole thing with Chris enabling George to have a moment of really picking and being nasty to Hannah. And Hannah, yet why didn't she say to Chris, I can't work with him again. I can't work with him because of his behaviour. Quite interesting, because Hannah's quite a bold character. She doesn't hold back normally. Maybe she sees it as a game and doesn't quite realise how we see George as a baddie. Jolene is an interesting character, and we've seen her go from being absolutely down in the dumps on one side and putting on a brave face in the pub several times in the last few weeks. So yes, while Kenton seems to be slightly cross, as Rob said in his roundup, slightly cross that it was worse that Marky followed her to the supermarket, but not it was okay to have texts and phone calls. It's a very interesting story, how Jolene has reacted to this. And I don't think we've got to the bottom of the story. I don't think this is the end of the line for that story. Yeah, but great, great call. Thank you, Becky.
I'm going to hold back on commenting on Hannah until after our next call. But in terms of some of the other women who have been victims of misogyny or abuse, we had obviously the long-running story about Helen and Rob. And we've come out of that with Helen apparently now strong again and robust, and she certainly was against anybody trying to coddle her too much after Rob's death. But we haven't really heard much of her more recently since then, so we don't know quite how that's going, and I guess there's still potential for it to unravel. And then, yes, Jolene, so hard to judge. Sometimes she's tough as nails and the businesswoman with the singing career who has had to deal with all kinds of issues, I would imagine, through her long career as the Lily of Leighton Cross. And Emma, she's Emma. She frustrates me so much.
Yeah.
Because half the time she is grounded, sensible, wise, and a real pillar of support for Ed. And then when it comes to George, she seems to be completely blind, and she was totally unreasonable in her approach to Jolene over George's ban. And I was extremely disappointed, actually, that Jolene, in trying to get Emma to stay working at the Bull, capitulated so much on that ban and saying that she was wrong and she'd overreacted. She absolutely had not overreacted. I think that she had, if anything, she has been far too soft on George, even allowing him to have an apology for now. And George's behaviour is such that would get him barred from any pub, I'd have thought, with little chance of ever coming back. So it was a bit frustrating that Jolene folded to Emma there. But I think we've got another call about George coming straight up. So let's hear that and then perhaps pick up on some other points. And this one comes from Stephanie.
Hello, Dumpty Dumland. It's novelist Stephanie here, calling in on, I'm going to guess, Wednesday afternoon with a plot prediction. I hope the sound quality is okay. I'm sitting in my studio, absolutely hammering down with rain, so I hope that's not being picked up. Anyway, I want to talk about George. One of the things that I think the artist does really well is reflect the reality of life and the reality of how people who are unpleasant or difficult can just rumble on in a community for years and years and years. And I thought George was going to be one of those characters. I could see him blagging his way into some fantastic job with Martin Gibson and always managing to cover up the fact that he wasn't very good at it. And then I could imagine him persuading some amazing woman to marry him and then treating her really badly. So that was the way that I thought it was going to go. But I've changed my mind over the last couple of weeks because it feels like it's escalating too quickly. So one of the things that George can't bear is the people who see through him, and Jolene saw through him, which was uncomfortable. And Hannah has 100% got his number. So I think Hannah is the place where this is all going to come to a head and where we're going to see that kind of out of control element of George come to fruition. He's got good at hiding things from Emma, who thinks he's been through some sort of transformation, but it's clear that actually what has transformed is his ability to hide things from Emma. So this is what I think. I hope I'm wrong. I think there's going to be an acid attack on Hannah. I don't think George is physically confrontational despite all of his bodybuilding. So yeah, that's what I think.
Thank you for that call, Stephanie. That's quite a chilling plot prediction there. I think that Hannah has largely got George's number. I think one of the reasons that she did not complain to Chris about being paired up with George for circuit training is that she thinks that she can handle him. And I think overall, she probably can. I think that she is an extremely sensible woman and knows what she's doing. She's got no illusions about George. Now, whether she would foresee him going down the path as dark as an acid attack, I don't know. But I would like to think that even if George were to try and do something that vicious, she would stop it or spot it at least before the actual attack itself. And so that she will come away from that. And that would then expose George as being seriously criminal rather than just the nuisance that he so far has been. And we might get the story about misogyny and so forth. He is an unpleasant character. And yes, it's difficult to see how they can sustain him over a very long time because he does seem to be getting so close to the edge.
Yeah, when I first heard that call, I thought, wow, that is an amazing plot prediction. I don't know about an acid attack, but I can see where Stephanie's coming from because, yeah, George, I think he has tried, because he uses words with his parents and his grandparents to wile his way into things and around things. I mean, he's got Eddie wound round his little finger, hasn't he, with that ridiculous cheating business and Eddie encouraging him and the we was Rob business. Whilst he's winding, he's able to communicate with those people, he's finding Hannah, he can't communicate with her because she's far cleverer than he is and she's far more on the ball and she's seen him coming, as Stephanie said. So I think that, yeah, the idea of having some kind of attack from a third flank might be, yes, on the cards, whether it's an acid attack or something else, because he's already attacked her by persuading Will that they should move into her house on the green, and she's lost her home. So at that point, and that was after the sausage roll package incident when he was working at Barrow's. Yeah, I can see him trying to work out how to do something, but I would hope that Hannah is wily enough and on the ball enough to see something coming that, as you say, might expose George for the complete and utter twat that he is. But he's not the only man that has felt a bit, harking back to Becky's call, the original call, because George and Eddie and Harry and several other, Justin this week, all the men have been very, well, frankly, irritating to me.
Thank goodness we've got Robert to balance that out.
Even Robert, I was irritated with him by the end of the week. So I'm sorry, men. It's a down week for you.
Just to hark back also to Becky's call, the one other person who really can see through George but doesn't do it enough is Brad. And I suspect that George probably wouldn't want to plan something like an attack on Hannah without bragging about it to Brad, at which point I think he would recognise that something had to be done to forestall that.
So who would Sorry, I seem to interrupt you, but who would Brad talk to, do you think, on that occasion?
Jazza, I think he might talk
yeah.
to.
Yeah, I thought either Jazza or his uncle, Anil.
Yes. Anil, again, another one who definitely sees through George and isn't as charmed by him as his immediate family is.
Yeah, exactly.
Shall we have our next call?
Why not?
And this one is the familiar sound of Glyn.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Glyn here. I'm calling in on Thursday evening, and it hasn't really been the cheeriest week so far, has it, in the Archers? Tonight's episode with Eve and Alice was fairly hard listening. I think Alice should remember the commitment she put in to her recovery, to the point where she effectively said to Chris, I can't concentrate on my recovery and also be a wife and mother, and therefore we're going to have to split up. And look at whether Harry is currently putting in anything like the same commitment. And quite frankly, I don't think he is. I hope Alice will walk away from it, because if she doesn't, I can see this only turning into an even grimmer storyline than it already is. So Harrison got away with a final written warning, and then Jolene did speak to him, but we only heard that in recorded speech. And then later in the episode, we heard Jolene and Kenton, inverted commas, getting back to normal, close inverted commas. I don't know. Was this a signal that that bit of the storyline is over and Marky is going to be called at some point off mic? Perhaps not, but sometimes that's the way the Archers do things. Well, that's all for this week. Stay safe, everybody. Have a great time and speak to you soon.
Thank you very much for that, Glyn. Yeah, the Alice and Eve conversation as a mother of an addict. I know exactly where Eve is coming from. Also, I had a mother who rejected me and didn't speak to me for 22 years. So I can see it from what Alice was seeing. How could you walk away from your child? So I found it a very emotional conversation, but I thought it was extremely well done. Alice went from being sheepish about going to see Eve and sure that Eve wanted to know and already knew the information about the diagnosis that Harry had had. And obviously she was completely in the dark about that. So I found it a fascinating conversation, very moving, very touching. And in fact, I was quite surprised that more people hadn't talked about that conversation in our calls and emails.
It's been discussed quite a bit in the Facebook group. And yes, I thought that it was very impressive, and it was painting a fairly bleak picture of what it's like to have an addict in the family. And I think several people in the Facebook group suggested that an organization that supports families of alcoholics is the place to go for that. But the other person, of course, and this happened after Glyn's call, was Harry himself and his discussions with Alice on Friday and his clear determination to wheedle his way back into Alice's life. And I think that to pretend that he was taking all this seriously, I don't believe a word of it, I'm afraid. I've gone hard over from giving Harry the benefit of the doubt for an extended period of time to now being deeply suspicious of his motives. And the final words of the episode, you won't regret it. I think we could hear the entire Archers listening community, the whole of Dumpty Dum, thinking, oh, yes, you will, Alice. Oh, yeah. Yes, you will.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you, I wanted to give Harry the benefit of the doubt, although there's something about his voice right from the very beginning, from that first shouting at Alice about his niece's pony, the first encounter. Something about his voice grated on me, and I don't know what it is. There's just something in the timbre of his voice that did that. But I tried to give him the benefit of the doubt, but very quickly I became very suspicious of him. I didn't like his dealing with and threatening of Harrison, and he's completely and utterly gone down, and I am now don't trust him one bit. I found it very irritating that he was able to wheedle himself and wheedle Alice into his life. She took him to the doctors because he'd obviously been drinking with his dropping his car keys, etc., and that conversation. So she was trying to help him. But then I would have dropped him at the doctor's surgery and moved on.
Run away, yes, leaving him without a car.
Exactly. I'm sure there was somebody who would have been able to help him. I'm sure he could have called somebody. I'm sure he could have. I don't know. You couldn't call a taxi here, so I don't know whether you could in... Where were they? Darrington.
Darrington, yeah.
Yeah, but very interesting, Glyn. Yeah, as you said, since Glyn's call, we've definitely seen that move on and red flags flying. Alice, get away.
Thank you for that call, Glyn. Next up, we have Pip.
Hello, Dumpty Dumland. It's Pip here, now of Cornwall rather than Thornton Heath. We have escaped South London. I'm calling just because it's Friday afternoon now and I've just caught up with this week's episodes. And obviously we've had Harrison's panel review, which is great that he's keeping his job. 2-year written warning feels appropriate. I'm surprised he hasn't been demoted, but there we go. It is all just a storyline at the end of the day. But in reality, I think also in some of the constabularies, they are really fighting for numbers. So they would probably be more inclined to try and keep as many officers in post as they can. It's all a balancing act. So yeah, good news. However, in other news, I really am just getting really bored of this Alice storyline about the alcoholism continuing, obviously not her, but with Harry. And it's just like now she's becoming his support. And it's this, can we just give her something else? It feels like we've done it now and she's in recovery and she's doing really well. And we seem to be stepping away from it a bit. And now we've had the resolution of Harry and Harrison's debacle. But now she's being sucked back into being like a support network for him. And it's just like, can we just give another string to her bow? Can we let her move on from it and not have to keep going over old ground now with another character? It feels, excuse the pun, but a bit like a one-trick pony really with her right now. I'd love to see that just be dealt with by somebody else and let her get on with her life. But yeah, otherwise, hope everybody else as well. And look forward to hearing Dumpty Dum next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much for that call, Pip. I was really hoping that you'd call this week because it was good to get an experienced view of Harrison's misconduct hearing. And from what you said, the outcome was realistic. I too thought that demotion was a real possibility coming out of that. I thought it was the most likely thing rather than him being dismissed. But a 2-year written warning is obviously a reasonable thing. You didn't say anything to suggest that the way that the whole procedure was portrayed was totally unrealistic, though I suspect Pip has probably not had direct experience of a misconduct hearing, at least not from the position that Harrison found himself in. I was slightly surprised, but I have now learnt that these things are held in public. I had a quick look, and I know that the Metropolitan Police say that if there's a misconduct hearing, they advertise them all in advance. And there are 8 places for members of the general public and 4 for members of the press to sit in and listen to those things. And you book in advance. My local constabulary is Gloucestershire, and they too publicise upcoming misconduct hearings. I don't know how many places there are, but you get in touch and you can go along and listen. There was only one on their list, and it was unfortunately not upcoming. It was at the end of March, and so by the time I went to look it up, by the time Harrison had his hearing, this one had been and gone. So I didn't get a chance to go along and see what they were really like. The one thing that did annoy me, though, and I'm sure that this was a mistake in the script writing, some of the legal language used, particularly by Ms. Cromwell, was definitely dodgy. The reference to calling Harry for cross-examination. You don't cross-examine your own witness, you cross-examine the other side's witnesses. And she also made a reference to classified material. And while there's information that Harrison looked up on the police national computer is sensitive personal information, it's not classified, or at least it's highly unlikely to be classified unless we're in some sort of spy story or terrorism story, because most material is not, to use the modern technical term, protectively marked. Because that doesn't apply to stuff that is merely sensitive personal information.
Yeah.
So the language was a bit off, but I'm guessing that the process was reasonably accurate.
Yeah, I think we're all, there's lots of mini experts out in the Archers listening world, so I'm sure there'd be a lot of people who would be crying from the rooftops if they got it completely wrong. I want to talk about the latter part of Pip's call, where she's talking about being bored with Alice and Harry. Can't say I'm bored with the Alice and Harry storyline, but I completely agree with Pip. I just wish Harry had never come into it and this complication, or Harry had just been a boyfriend, and that we had seen that relationship, and not the whole alcoholic things. It's very grating that it's gone back to alcoholism. I'd have sooner seen Alice getting to grips with the fact that Brian and Miranda have got together and how that affects her relationship with Brian, how that affects her relationship, if she were to have one, with Miranda, and on her reflections about her late mum, because Alice was the baby of that family. And I would have much sooner, if the story had gone down that line, and also maybe put her into crisis about ism. But I don't, I'm a bit disappointed that they've brought in Harry as an alcoholic, let's put it like that, to advance the story.
Yes, Harry coming in with some sort of secret that he was hiding from Alice is one thing. And I think a lot of us thought that there was something going on there, but not that it was alcoholism. And I think something else would have been a bit more interesting when it comes to putting pressure on Alice and stressing her recovery from alcolism. We have had some discussion of Alice and Brian and Miranda. We had that
with Kate.
Kate. And I think that perhaps we're going to see more of the children's reaction to Brian moving on from Kate rather than from Alice. And after all, Kate is living with Brian, so has a much more intimate relationship with what's going on, and the fact that Brian and Miranda were relying on Kate being in Bath with Jacob so that she could stay over. And at some point, they're going to have to face up to the idea of Miranda staying over while Kate is in residence, unless Brian goes and stays over with Miranda.
Yes, exactly. And we don't know where Miranda is. You know, she's not very far away, don't we? Because Justin went over to see her this week, knocked on her door and made up a story about a tent.
Yes. So I think she may be a little further than Borchester, but she certainly isn't at the other end of the country.
No. Mm-hmm. Yes. And nobody's talked very much about Justin. At the end of this, if we've got time, we'll have to have a discussion amongst ourselves about Justin Lillian, I think. Make up a call.
Okay. Those were the first few calls. There's a couple more to come, which we'll hear very soon. And if you'd like to join us by calling in yourself, like Becky has done for the first time this week, or dropping us a line by message or email, Jacqueline is here to tell you how, and the details will also be in the show notes.
Now, the first option is to record a message or a plot prediction by going to www.speakpipe.com/dumptydum. The next option is to send us a voice note or a message via WhatsApp on 07810 012 881. Or +44 and remove the first zero if you're calling from outside the UK. Please keep your call to a maximum of 2 minutes. Finally, we have an email address you could contact us on if you would rather write to us with your views. Maximum of 250 words, please. The email address is dumatdum@mail.com. Do bear in mind you need to be at least 18 to contribute.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Now, let's get back to our calls. And our next call starts like this.
Y'all know how this goes.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs.
Greetings, Jacqueline, Stephen, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here, caller entering on early Friday afternoon. And yes, we had an earthquake here a couple of hours ago, centered 50 miles west of New York. While I don't want to minimize the phenomenon of earthquakes, this one wasn't a big deal. Is the ground moving under the feet of some Ambridge residents? To that, I would say yes. We discovered that Harry has elevated liver function tests, a consequence of his alcoholism. At this point, not a surprise to us. And apparently, it was not news to Harry himself, but he remains camped out on the banks of that river in Egypt. Next step, abdominal ultrasound. I have little doubt that it will reveal some degree of cirrhosis or scarring of the liver. Can the cirrhosis be undone if an alcoholic stops drinking? The answer is no. Can further damage be prevented? The answer is yes. So it's imperative that Harry do so. Can Harry just stop drinking without support as he promised to do? I highly doubt it. I do have one patient who is older than Harry and has been a functional alcoholic for many years. Found out that he had cirrhosis in August 2022 and was told by his liver specialist that if he continued to drink, he'd be in liver failure in 6 months. He then stopped drinking without support because he didn't want to die. I'd say that's more the exception than the rule. Harry, like most alcoholics, has made several attempts to stop drinking and has repeatedly fallen off the wagon. I do hope that his liver specialist lays it out plainly to him. You will die if you continue to drink. Harry then needs to go into residential treatment for an extended period of time. Harry's mom and family, you need to go to Al-Anon. But you're right, you've done what you can. Alice, you were manipulated back into this, but now you've done what you can and need to walk away until he's very clearly sober and committed to sobriety. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for that, Witherspoon. Yes, we're all quite surprised to hear of the earthquake yesterday afternoon in New York. I'm glad that it didn't cause you any problems personally. Harry, yeah, you've given us a very good medical point of view of what cirrhosis is and what the prognosis is. I didn't know that if you stopped drinking, you couldn't reverse the liver damage. I assumed it was one of those organs that rebuilt itself, I suppose scarring. You've always got scarring, haven't you? Alice was manipulated into helping Harry, and that is, I just think it's bad and she should walk away.
The liver is one of these interesting organs. It is actually very, very good at rebuilding itself. If you take away 3/4 of somebody's liver, it will regrow back to full size.
Gosh.
But cirrhosis, which is, as Witherspoon said, it's a scarring of the liver, and the liver doesn't repair itself from that. It's permanently scarred, and the only treatment for a cirrhotic liver is a transplant.
Gosh.
And you have stories of various people, like George Best had a liver transplant, and you then get a new liver which hasn't got cirrhosis, and then you start drinking again like George Best did, and you go through the whole process again. But the liver is remarkably capable of repairing itself as long as it's not suffering from cirrhosis. That's one of the things that it can't recover from. But as I said, if you can take out large chunks of it as a result of treatment for liver cancer, for instance, and what's left will regrow and be fully functional in a remarkably short amount of time.
But Harry, I don't think that he's making all the right noises, but there's no way in which he's committed to doing something. He's making all the right noises to get Alice on his side, going to Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon for his family and those kind of organisations. But Harry is just being gung-ho about it. He's thinking, I've got away with it so far and I'll carry on. And if this helps me get back into Alice's life, then I'll use that.
As Witherspoon said, he's in denial about all of this, and he's not going to get better without help. And I think he's claiming that he has seen the light and it's all going to be good and he wants Alice to help him. But as we've said already, that's not because he believes that Alice will help him. It's because he wants to get Alice back into his life. And he is an increasingly ghastly man.
Indeed. I think we're both singing from the same songbook there, Stephen. I think we've got that message across.
Now for our final call, and that's from a first-time caller-in-er. This is Sue.
Hi, Dumpty Dummers. It's Sue Davies here from Telford in Shropshire, probably one of your newest contributors because I've only just discovered the podcasts. And also, I've not long joined the Facebook group. George, yes, I wonder with Emma how much of this is guilt due to the financial hardships that they've suffered and how little she could actually give George growing up. Children, yes, they do actually pick up on atmospheres from the day they're born. So I would imagine George would actually feel a lot of what was going on, hear a lot of what was going on, but maybe not be able to process it until much later. So I think the lack of respect he has for Emma is due to the fact that he feels that she couldn't give him a good life. And it makes me wonder how Kira is going to turn out. Yeah, Pip and Rosie, what an awkward situation for Stella. And I do hope that that resolves itself. Miranda and Brian, yeah, definitely. She's a schemer, just like Justin. And I have to say, I'm surprised they broke up in one way because they deserve each other. And finally, because I don't want to go over the 2 minutes, I'm with Han. I think Chris is very fit. Take care, everyone.
Thank you for that call. Shropshire is one of my favourite parts of the country, the South Shropshire Hills in particular. I think Telford, you've got the Wrekin right there, written about by A.E. Houseman. So I love Shropshire. As far as George is concerned, and Kira, I think you make an excellent point. It's Kira's birthday this weekend, as we've heard. She's, I think, going to be 13. And George's birthday is the next day, and I think he's going to be 19. And it will be interesting to see the extent to which Kira is affected by her upbringing the same way that George has been. Of course, with Kira, there isn't the whole business about paternity and the Will-Ed triangle. Kira is very clearly Emma and Ed's child, and I think has probably had a much smoother upbringing than George. But we really don't know much about her because she's never spoken, and I suspect that we will start to hear her from her fairly soon. She's getting towards the age when Ambridge children are no longer seen but not heard, or of course not even seen, given that it's on the radio. So I do think it will be interesting, and I think that the two of them will be an interesting contrast in terms of half-siblings.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the fact that she's 13 and George is, what we think, building up to some kind of explosive something or other, outing of himself, that may be very relevant to Kira being 13. And it's one of those storylines that obviously started a long time ago when Kira was born. And the contrast between the early teen and the late teen, I think, is going to be absolutely vital to how we see George's actions. So I predict she's going to be quite a good character in the years to come.
Yes.
Now, Sue also talked about Miranda and Brian. And she says that she can't understand why Justin, who is a creep, and Miranda, who is scheming, ever got divorced, because they really suit each other. But Brian, we're now seeing Brian as the new softer Brian. But I always think of Brian, I love the character of Brian, but I think of Brian as being a kind of slightly creepy, out for what he can get man of the county. Also, I detested him as a philanderer when he was married. No, I detested him through the whole Siobhan story and the impact that had on Jenny, and then Jenny's graciousness of bringing up Rory. But I think Brian also is a bit of a manipulative person. So maybe we're seeing Miranda through Justin's eyes as a very manipulative woman. But maybe Brian has into this to get his own back on Justin as well.
Possibly. Yes, it's interesting to see Brian, the former cravat-wearing Lothario, striking out after the death of Jenny. And it'd be interesting to see how this relationship with Miranda goes. It could be a number of ways. It might be showing that the reason that Miranda was so scheming was because Justin was such a horrible man. And with the right partner, Miranda's best parts come to the fore, just as perhaps some of Brian's better parts come to the fore now that he's recovered from, or showing signs of having recovered from Jenny's death. It'll be interesting. Whether Justin and Miranda deserved each other, well, it would have been, continued to be, I think, one of those really quite fiery relationships sometimes that fire conceals a deep love, and sometimes it conceals the two of them despising each other. And I have a feeling that it was more of the second than the first. Miranda probably saw something in Justin, had become disappointed that whatever it was she saw in him wasn't really there. And it can't have been his money, because it seems that she was the one with the money.
She says.
That's true. We only have her word for it.
We don't know the other half of the story. There's always two sides to a story.
But Justin didn't say that it was all untrue. He's had the opportunity to, when he and Lillian and
at a ball, Stephen, are you really going to do that at a ball? I would be able to hear anyway.
We'll see. I suspect that there are elements of the truth to Miranda's version of the story.
Right. Yes, I suspect you're probably true. Now, whilst we're talking about couples and fiery relationships, let's just talk a little bit about Justin and Lillian. I thought the spat that they had this week, was it on Thursday night, was almost the best scene of the week for me, because Justin had to justify himself for his going on and on about Brian and Miranda to Lillian, and Lillian then finding out that he'd been to visit not one of them, but both of them, to try and put Brian off his relationship with Miranda. I think Lillian was magnificent. She came out with some absolutely brilliant phrases when she said, "You've been fraternizing with her." I nearly spat my cup of tea out. I thought that was amazing. And she's said this to him before: "No more lies, Justin. No more lies."
She said it before, and he lies again.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. It's a bit like an addiction. I don't like Justin.
Yes. So why is Lillian continuing with Justin? I suppose that it's better than being lonely.
I guess that might be it. But also, he is also a flatterer. He ended up in that same conversation saying, "Don't you worry, my darling, she doesn't hold a candle to you," which is an expression I've never really understood. But he's a flatterer. He's a golden-tongued serpent. And Lillian needs that. She's a dramatic person, and he's dramatic.
When Miranda first showed up in the village, she made remarks to Lillian about Justin's habit of chasing after other women, but saying that she wasn't worried about it in this case, because Lillian clearly wasn't the sort that he would go after.
Yes, as well as, wasn't there a comment about a plastic surgeon? Oh, we know Lillian's had some work done at some point, hasn't she, a few years ago?
Yes, I can't remember these exact details.
No, I can't, but I have a vague recollection of it. Yeah, very interesting. But I personally loved that argument between Justin and Lillian. Yeah, it's just one of those good scenes when you think, yes, that's it. That's those characters really coming to getting to grips with it.
Yeah, so that scene and the scene between Alice and Eve are both excellent pieces of work by Daniel Thurman.
Exactly. Brilliant.
So those are the calls. Thank you so much for calling in. We love them. Do call in next week, and we particularly welcome first-time caller inners, of which we have had two this week. Now, did we receive any emails or WhatsApp messages this week?
Yeah, we had two. The first one is from Nicola, who is a first-time emailer inner, and the subject line is New Robert, and it goes like this. "Hi, Dumpty Dummers. I've been an Archers fan for 20 years, but I'm ashamed to say I've only just found the podcast. I can't believe I've been missing out on all the gossip and plot theories. I am now a convert. In relation to New Robert, I had a different thought to other listeners. I noticed Robert's irritation, agitation, sudden loss of purpose, and uncharacteristic interruption of Lindy in the shed. I am concerned that this is start of a dementia storyline. It feels like there are a few subtle early indicators. I hope I'm wrong, but wondered whether anyone else shared my opinion. Love, Nicola."
Thank you for that message, Nicola. And welcome to Dumpty Dum. I'm glad you found us. I think it's a reasonable question to ask about New Robert and whether he is going to be portrayed as suffering from dementia. I think it would be pretty depressing from the actor's point of view to be brought in after Robert had been silent for a couple of years just to run a dementia story. And I suspect that if they'd wanted to, they could have done that with actually Robert being staying as a silent character and seeing it all from Linda's perspective. So I hope that what you're picking up as possible indicators of dementia aren't actually that. I guess that there might be other things that they could be signalling, or it might just be all part of getting used to the new voice and so on. But I don't know. What do you think, Jacqueline?
Yeah, I don't really agree with you. I think I agree more with Nicola. I think Robert's obsessiveness with the doorbell thing and about the vigilante kind of attitude that he's got, and his total inability to read the room when he went into the cottage and saw Harrison, and she's glammed up. They've got soft music playing. The deco is on the table. I'm sorry, most people would be able to read that room. And that's unlike Robert. There's been a subtle change because he is someone who would have been able to read that. And as you say, yeah, a bit depressing for the actor to be brought in for this kind of storyline. But I think it will be more emotive. It will be more touching for us, and to see the crisis that Linda and Robert have through this. We may not live it as fully as we did the Jack Woolley storyline when he went down. And then there are so many forms of dementia. Obsessiveness is one of the forms of dementia that we don't hear about. We hear about people losing things, you know, losing their memory, losing their orientation. But obsessing over certain things, small facts, is something that, yeah, I think is one of those signs of one of the forms of dementia. So I think it is going down that line.
I think it would be a pity, because that's, to me, that feels too much like a carbon copy of the Jack and Peggy storyline, with the weight of the struggle with it being borne by a partner rather than by, say, rest of the family. So,
yeah, but I think that's the difference here. I think Peggy kept it to herself out of perhaps shame at the time. How do you handle that with a vibrant businessman like Jack Woolley, who became, yeah, lost himself? Whereas Linda, I think, is more likely to be more open and talk to other people. But the thing that happened this week where he was sent off on his birthday because she was cooking. For goodness sake, they live in a Hanbridge Hall. Surely he could have gone and sat somewhere else, even if it was in the Shepherd's Hut with a book or the Radio 4.
It did seem a bit odd, yes.
Yeah. Plot machinations. Things happen for reasons.
We will see how it develops over the next few weeks.
Yeah. Good call, though, Nicola. I know. Good email, Nicola.
The next email is, of course, from Chris in Indiana. And it has the subject line, Viagra and Cocktails. And it goes like this. Greetings, Stephen and Jacqueline, and greetings to everyone in Dumpty Dumland. A quick word this week on my way out the door. Easter week was truly a time of miracles. Brian exhausted the supply of Viagra in Ambridge to give us all a surprise on Monday's episode. Is Miranda smitten by Brian's prowess, or only enduring him to piss off Justin? And why do we still tell the lie that sex is for young people when, from what I remember, young people barely know what they're doing in that department? I say more power to Brian, and heaven only knows what Jill and Leonard are getting up to. Jolene finally told everybody what was going on, and we finally learned what was going on with Harry Chilcott and his blood work. I thought I'd be bored and tired of Harry, but now I'm interested, and it was his mother Eve who really touched me. Alice couldn't entirely understand Eve's exhaustion, because Alice had a story which more or less turned out happy. Harry is the other side of that, and anyone who has ever dealt with people caught up in long-term drug or alcohol addiction can understand where this poor woman is coming from. Rooting for Harry, Chris in Indiana.
Well, reading that, Chris, that means makes me feel a bit guilty about what we said earlier on about Harry, because, yeah, it is the other side of the alcoholic storyline. I think it's just that I don't like the idea of another alcoholic storyline, another addiction storyline at this moment in time. But yeah, very, very true. And as I said earlier, I think the conversation with Alice and Eve was absolutely excellent. Really, really well written. Very emotive. Very, very understandable. Going back to the Viagra thing, do you think there's Viagra available in Ambridge? Wow.
I believe almost anything like that can be ordered online discreetly.
Gracious,
and so mate. Forth.
I'm being educated.
I get all these things from a company from which I used to order shaving razors, which I don't tend to use so much.
Which obviously you've given up on now.
But they have a sideline in ED medication, and the other one is hair loss and stuff to combat that.
So Do you feel you're being targeted, Stephen?
Well, I think it's a bit too late on the hair loss.
A bit too late now.
So
both for the razors and the hair, yeah.
So I think you can get hold of that sort of stuff without having go and see Dr. Malik in Darrington.
Ah, right. Because I was thinking that Alice and Harry in the waiting room with Brian in the waiting room. So if it's all done online, fair enough. But actually, he has a heart condition, doesn't he? So maybe he shouldn't be taking things that he buys online. Who knows?
I suspect that there are checks done on that sort of thing if it's prescription medicine, or at least a pharmacist, if not a doctor, will have a look at it.
Very good. But thank you again, Chris. Good thoughts. Before we move on to talk about our Facebook page, let's talk about the Academic Archers and the conference planned for the weekend of the 27th and 28th of April at the Quakers Meeting House, Euston Road, London. Now, this year, we're not official partners with the Academic Archers, but quite a few of us will be attending. At least 10 people responded to our survey on the Facebook page, so we now have a plan for a couple of fringe meetups on both Friday and Saturday nights. Both nights, we shall meet up at the Euston Tap, a pub near Euston Station, at 6:30 p.m. Friday night, we have a table for 10 booked at Ravi Shankar, an Indian vegetarian restaurant on Drummond Street, which is only about 5-10 minutes walk away. And on Saturday night at Casa Chua, which is an Italian restaurant in King's Cross. So now we need to confirm the numbers. Please, can you email the Dumpty Dum email address to confirm your name and presence for either both or just one of the nights? Even if you only want to come for a drink and don't want to join in the meals afterwards, that would be great. But just let us know so we can plan where we sit in the pub or everything. Because there's only three of us. We don't need to have taken over a big corner. After recording, I'll put all these details on the Facebook page and on a Dumpty Dum live conversation so you can confirm your reservation there too. We're really, really looking forward to seeing as many of you as possible. It's getting close now, Stephen, isn't it?
It is. And I will put links to the websites for those three locations, the Euston Tap, the Ravi Shankar and the Casa Tua, in the show notes for this episode. And the email address that you should contact is, of course, dumptydum@mail.com.
Brilliant.
Let's move on to Facebook, where we have lots of very busy, friendly, thoughtful and thought-provoking members. And we need to give a very warm welcome to the newest of you, who are Jim Sheech. And I apologise if it's a Gaelic pronunciation that I have missed there. Sue Davies, Jerry Graham,
Gillian Holmes, Eleanor Moriarty, Caroline Drury and Louise Crumley. So let's hear what our Facebook group has been talking about this week from Vicky.
Hello everyone, Vicky Cole here, calling in on Friday before the final episode of the week. Our Stephen had another good piece of birthday knowledge for us. This would have been Grace Archer's 95th birthday this week, but for an unfortunate incident in 1955, and Glenys Goodwill blames ITV for that unfortunate incident. On to Harrison. We didn't think much of the hearing process. T. Brown Artivist CA, Peter Price, Susan de la Mer, our Stephen, and Jonah Titchmarsh, among others, all had things to say, particularly about the prosecuting barrister. Jonah Titchmarsh thanks God for a sensible conclusion, although he doesn't think Harrison will remain in the police long term. Charlie Emma has a prediction that Harrison will be plunged into a dilemma that may put him on the wrong side of the final warning, most likely to do with the events at the Bull, and our Michelle Wright has a similar view. A final word on this from T. Brown Artibus CA again. She foresees Harrison becoming a vigilante superhero, Bat Burn, who could take care of Markey, Philip Moss, or any of the Titcheners. And Anne Stevenson asked, could George be added to the list? Harry's doctor's appointment was weird, especially Alice's presence and contributions to the discussion. Kate Lyle said that a decent doctor would have stopped that from happening, and Raffi J didn't think she was in control of that situation. Paula Louise asks why the GP didn't step in to excuse Alice as soon as she said she felt uncomfortable. Emotional blackmail ahead, says Jonah Titchmarsh. And Harry's lying about going back to drinking because of the breakup, say Ray Milner, Gillian Rogers, Sally Owen and Lily Clough. Kate Lyle says he manipulated Alice into going into the appointment with him and that he is utterly vile. And Ray Milner also thinks that he is manipulating Alice. Fiona Casper had a different view, that Harry is Alice's new project and that she is determined to support him, whether he wants her help or not. Thursday's episode with the scenes between Alice and Harry's mother provoked more concern for Alice. Sally Owen was concerned that Alice will be drawn into trying to help Harry, and she is not certain that Alice is sufficiently secure yet in her own recovery. Sally Ann Stacey thinks it's a dangerous situation for Alice, while Helen Isherwood suggests Alice is so emotionally immature that she doesn't consider, step back from, or think anything through, and believes that a carefully placed apology will absolve her from all the inappropriate moves. Like Helen, I have also lost count of all Alice's apologies. Suzanne Steele says, "Honestly, can't Alice keep her mouth shut?" but thinks that this is a good opportunity for the scriptwriters to introduce the concept of support that is available for families of alcoholics. Finally, there was some absolute smut with regard to Brian and Miranda, which I'm far too ladylike to get into here. All I'll say is, please, please, please look at the posts from Jonah Titchmarsh and Chris Gibson and all the comments. All hilarious. Well, that's it for this week. Do go and have a look at the Facebook page and join in if you can. Till next time, bye-bye for now.
Thank you, Vicky, and thank you so much to everyone on the Dumpty Dum Facebook. If you'd like to join them, please do, but don't forget to answer the very easy membership questions so that we know that you're a real person. Now to Twitter, where you'll find us at Dumpty Dum. Make sure you include the Archers hashtag using a capital T and A so the visually impaired who use screen readers can enjoy any Archers-based tweets. As well as at Dumpty Dum, I can occasionally be found at Wenlock House.
But we're both spending a bit more time following the Archers on Blue Sky, where I am at jberto.bluesky.social.
And I am wenlock.bsky.social. So, let's find out who has won the Twitter medals this week.
Tweet, tweet, pushcat. Or should that be XX these days?
Hello, Jacqueline, Stephen, and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. It's Purple Pumpkin here with Tweets and Skeets of the Week. And my thanks as ever to Bernadette, Jen, Glyn, and everyone who tags at Dumpty Dum to make sure we see all the best ones. This week on Twitter and Blue Sky, we were continuing to worry about the loss of the Omnibus tweet-along when the show moves to a later time in the day from this week. So fingers crossed there's still wit and giggles to be found next week. On Blue Sky, the chorus of "Don't do it, Alice" was drowned out only by the number of people convinced that if Kenton and Jolene are so loved up, it must mean the pub is about to be burned to the ground. And also on Blue Sky, Kate H at Riversky 0338, Finton the Wrong, Finton T Wrong, and Bruce the Bunny at brucethebunny.bsky.social were among those who pointed out that Harry's doctor's appointment with Alice in tow was very reminiscent of Rob's tumour diagnosis with Helen in attendance, with a similar whiff of emotional blackmail and controlling behaviour coming from Harry. Now, to this week's medals for Blue Sky Skeets and X Post, all of which we continue to consider as Tweets of the Week, and the first two follow each other chronologically. In bronze, it's Little Kim at Little Kim on Harrison. What do we reckon? Demoted? Sacked? Hung by the bunting till dead? And the silver medalist is Ninesy at Ninesy. Final written warning. Will Harrison be able to keep his great big trap shut for 2 years? Dear reader, we doubt it. And the gold medal goes to Mr. Snodes at mrsnodes.bsky.social on Harry. Heading towards cirrhosis? Is that the other side of the bypass? And on that unsympathetic note, that's it for this week. I hope to see you all on hashtag the Archers on Twitter or Blue Sky at some time next week.
Thank you for that, Theo, and congratulations to all who are mentioned in this week's roundup. And don't forget, we're on Instagram at Dumpty Dum, where Theo also looks after things. And once again, we're asking if there's any Dumpty Dummer out there who'd like to take over the Instagram feed, please let us know.
Next week, we'll be once again recording at our normal time of first thing Saturday morning. So please get your calls in by midnight on Friday, UK time. And as we come to the end of this episode, we need to say thanks to all our lovely contributors and the team of Dumpty Dummers behind the scenes. And a great big thank you to all of you who are listening to us too. We love making this podcast and sharing our love of the Archers around the world.
And we must say thank you to Kim Durham and Sonny Ormond for their voices, and to our podcasting parents, Lucy V. Freeman and Royfield Brown.
Thank you so much for listening and joining us today. We are now off to have a stroganoff crisis. So it's au revoir from me.
And it's goodbye from me. Dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, dumpty, da, da, dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, dilly, dum, dumpty, dilly, dumpty, dilly, dumpty, dilly, dum, dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, dilly, dum. Dumpty, 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 dum, dumpty, dilly, dum.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.